Please join me in welcoming our guest minister, Tom Owenthal, and his sermon, What Makes America a Good Country?
Thank you, Peter, and it's my joy to be here and get to meet you. And Karen Musikis was the initial contact. I want to thank her as well. I haven't met her yet. And Rick Hoyt's a colleague, friend of mine, and I know that you're going through a transitional time here. And about a year from now, you will have selected your settled minister. In the 53 years I've been in ministry, I've got a lot of connections with Long Beach. I go back to John Nichols Booth, who taught me some magic along the way. You know, he said he never did magic in his ministry. But you might not have known when he was in Evanston, Illinois, in the 40s and the 50s, he's one of the premier magicians in this country. But he told me he never did magic because it was deceitful. I beg to differ with you, John. It's joyful and touches lives. But in any case, Rex Stuyzens, a friend of ours, Marguerite Lovett, on and on, Mitra Ranuma, a lot of people, ministers that have been here, Judy Tomlinson, probably missing some along the way that were interns, but these are all my colleagues. So I want you to know that it's a joy for me to return about once a year from San Diego, and I'll be keep doing that as long as the fire's in my belly, and to share my heart with you. I brought some of my books, and afterwards, as I greet you, if you're interested in buying a copy of a book, I'll autograph it for you, and be happy to spend time in the patio, as long as you want to share. Clearly, the overall health of America is on our minds and our hearts right now, and today's sermon won't be another tirade against our nation. I'm not very good at tirades. I don't believe in them. Oh, I rant and rave, yes, but we're a hurting country right now. What with lingering battles in the Middle East, and we're not out of Afghanistan, and will we enter Iran? A constipated Congress, how else can you describe it? Unresolved border tragedies. My wife and I will be there in, I think it's July 11th, on the border of the San Diego region where we are, to support in solidarity the families that are trying to make a move towards freedom out of violence, like so many in our country did, so many of us. And you got the muddled Mueller report. Will he show up? I guess he's showing up. Will he speak his truth boldly? Recent natural disasters, gun killings, persistent racial strife. Are we on the road at least to some reparations? Not to mention health care, educational and economic inequities bedeviling America, climate change. We're a troubled and troubling nation. And so I want to focus upon the cornerstones of democracy, or what makes America a good nation when we perform at our best. What ideals signify our American way of life, our dream, our mission? Well, there exist three qualities that rise to the top of my list: religious freedom, patriotic diversity, and compassionate service. You compile your own inventory. There's no right or wrong list. But freedom and diversity and compassionate service bespeak the soul of Unitarian Universalism as well. Indeed, that's why back in the 1950s, we were considered by some sociologists to be America's real religion. Now, whether or not that's precisely true then or now, our core values, you see, remain similar to those of this country at its founding and when it stays on purpose. First, religious freedom. Remember the Pilgrims? They were an English sect fleeing persecution in their homeland. They were called separatists because they desired to be completely separate from the official Church of England. These independent souls wanted to choose their own ministers democratically. Think of that. They insisted on local parish autonomy, just as our Unitarian Universalist congregations do today. Unquestionably, our American dream of religious freedom, which started in the Plymouth colony, has been tarnished over the years. In fact, in early America, an atmosphere of religious imperialism prevailed. The colonists saw nothing wrong with denying the rights of their Native American contemporaries and systematically deprived African American slaves of their inferior inherited and imported beliefs. Carolyn and I were recently in Washington, D.C. We've been there a few times in our 46 years together, but we made a special pilgrimage to see the African American Museum. We're founding members. It's been in existence about 3 years. This is not, you don't see this in an afternoon. This is about a 4 or 5 day pilgrimage. And we also saw the American Indian Museum, which was founded about 15 years ago. And there are many other well-established and very important museums in Washington, D.C. We only had time to see these two in the week that we were there. Changing our lives. A student of history will also recall that among the trees on the lawn of the Massachusetts State Capitol, just off Boston Common, where our Unitarian Universalist headquarters used to be, are statues honoring two women. First, Anne Hutchinson, expelled from the Massachusetts Bay Colony in 1638 for what? The religious crimes of heresy and conducting unauthorized discussions in her own home. And second, Mary Dyer, hanged on Boston Common in 1660 for what? The crime of simply being a Quaker. And Baptists in Virginia were subjected to horse whippings and other painful indignities. But gradually, between 1620 and 1776, America was steered toward the radically new idea of religious freedom. Fresh ways of thinking began to emerge with the Age of Reason, and Baptists and Quakers and Unitarians and Universalists all practiced religious toleration and encouraged its spread. So that by 1787, when the Constitution was written, and remember, some of America's founders were either Unitarians or Universalists, religious freedom was made the law of the land. And it was determined that a person's religious beliefs were his or her private concern and inviolate right. Private concern and inviolate right. You may remember that our American founders were related to various denominations, and they disagreed as to the nature of religion, debating whether it was rooted mainly in reason or revelation. But they were unswervingly committed to the notion of disallowing one dominant religion, a wall of separation between church and state. And so we dare not take for granted this noble experiment at the heart of our American mission. For in other countries, there's often no such pattern of religious diversity. One religious group may have special constitutional standing, as in England or Scandinavia. Another faith may dominate without having special legal rights, like in France or Mexico. Several groups may receive favored treatment. Look at Holland and Germany. When I worked in the Evangelische Kirche in West Berlin in the 1960s, 10% of everyone's income was automatically taken to support either the Protestant or Catholic churches of Germany. Or all religious belief and worship may be discouraged, as has been the case in Russia and China, and certainly in the Czech Republic until the overthrow of communism in 1989. In fact, our own congregation, a Unitarian congregation in Prague, which Carolyn and I have visited, suffered directly at the hands of the communist government, as well as being sabotaged regularly by inside traitors, some of you in the congregation. And in Romania, our Transylvanian Unitarian sisters and brothers, and I wear this stole from our congregation Brașov, Romania, proudly, woven by the created of the sisters and brothers of that congregation. They've been doubly persecuted as a religious and an ethnic minority, even until this day. It's better, but it's still there. And our religious kin in the Philippines suffer bigotry as well. Furthermore, sometimes the in-resident religion is not only fundamentalist, but also politicized, as tragically evidenced today throughout the Middle East. Yet we can hardly say that religious freedom has been fully achieved in America. Certain religious groups have been treated badly in our history. The histories of anti-Catholicism and anti-Semitism sorely illustrate that. And we Unitarian Universalists have been the target of our own share of discrimination and exclusion, despite our modest size. And there remain those, of course, who still clamor for America not only to be a theocracy, where everyone must believe in God, but a Christian theocracy at that. There's a certain, and we can name him now because he's serving time in prison, John Brokaw, for bombing an abortion clinic. He put it baldly. The things progressive liberal types say about me are absolutely true. I'm a very narrow-minded, intolerant, reactionary, Bible-thumping fundamentalist, a zealot and a fanatic, and I'm proud of it. But the reason the United States is a great nation is because she's blessed by God and because she was founded upon truth and justice and narrow-mindedness. No, Mr. Brokaw. Truth and justice and open-mindedness. We need to continue to bring up our children and our grandchildren in the belief that one may worship or not worship as she or he chooses, and that whatever the choice is, you can still be a first-rate American. We liberal religionists are as pro-life, pro-family, and pro-morality as any fundamentalist. And we must enter the political fray and promote vigorously, yet respectfully, our views of human freedom and dignity. For we're convinced that good religion and good government mean promoting a sense of pluralism, not favoritism. A sense of persuasion, not coercion. A sense of mediating moral language, not alienating jargon. A sense of humility, not arrogance, about ultimate beliefs and values. Furthermore, some of us believe that to achieve and sustain our ideals, we must subordinate ourselves for the good of the whole nation. In other words, sacrifice some. Sacrifice through taxes to properly educate all of our young. Sacrifice through community service as volunteers. Sacrifice social and economic entitlements when we don't need them. Simply sacrifice some of our personal freedoms in service of a healthy environment and a just society. That's where we came from as Americans. We need the Statue of Liberty on the East Coast to be supplemented by the Statue of Freedom and Responsibility on the West Coast. What if before we entered the voting booth during one of the critical elections coming up, someone was there to say, okay, my fellow citizen, please raise your right hand, and that if you don't want to raise your right hand, raise your left hand, or don't raise a hand, that's okay. Do you solemnly swear to vote for the common good of this land over your own private interests, so help you God, or whatever other power drives and dictates your journey? That's not a radical idea, folks. That's not a novel idea. That's at the core of the American experiment. A second mark of the American dream is our unswerving commitment to patriotic diversity. There's no single right way to be a patriot. That's a lover of and a loyalist to one's country. You choose your way and practice it. I choose my way and I practice it. Our UU congregations aspire to be a house of forthright opinion and wide embrace, welcoming a potpourri of patriots. All our religion ever demands is that we wear our patriotism honorably and express it respectfully. And patriots carry on a lover's quarrel with their homeland. Some 50 plus years ago, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. spoke at our Unitarian Universalist General Assembly shortly before he was assassinated. And he said, I'm proud to be a creatively maladjusted American. I'm proud because until the good society is realized, I will remain creatively maladjusted. Plus, patriots are known to wave flags, but not necessarily only one or even two, sometimes three flags, such as those we used to have standing tall in the meeting house in our congregation in San Diego. Flags representing our homeland, a flag representing the United Nations, and a flag representing the globe which we cradle in common. Why three? Because full-bore patriots are citizens of the universe. We're enlisted to serve and protect the well-being of country and more, the international network and more, the entire ecosystem. This is how I put it. My conscience, informed, compassionate, and always fallible, must remain in creative tension with the directives of my government. And so I will affirm America when she seems worthy of praise. Stand tall and shout and sing. And I will criticize her when she falls short of our founding mission. Stand tall and sing. And I will comfort her when she's in need of consolation. And frankly, I, like many of you, have been doing all three plenty in recent times. I simply refuse to make either our chalice or my conscience subordinate to any flag of any nation. Our voting record is the worst of any major country, and we're starving freedom's holy light when we refuse to exercise our vote. An election or so ago, I was seeing my dermatologist. And you know, when somebody's cutting into your skin, you got to talk about something other than just the pain, right? And pretty open-minded soul. And I said, how does it look? This was Clinton and Trump. And he said, I'm not going. I'm not voting. I said, what? That's all I said, I think, because he was working on my face. And he did his work. And I talked to his assistant, an 18-year-old young woman, trying to find her way in the world. I said, Rachel, are you voting in the next election? And she said, I don't know. I said, do you need a ride, Rachel? If you do, let me know. The road remains long and hard. Given voter suppression in our country, the Electoral College debacle in our country. And at some point, we're getting maybe close. Congress might deign to make Election Day a national holiday, wherein there's automatic voter registration and universal mail-in ballots. Why not? What's to argue about with that? We've got to do everything possible to address the voter apathy in our citizenry. I know there's been a resurgence of interest among the 20-somethings. I'll never forget Carol and I were celebrating the 50th anniversary of Selma. I was blessed as a young man in seminary to get on a bus from California to go to Selma. First time I'd ever been in the South, and that's a whole other story. But Carolyn and I went back to celebrate that I had been a veteran in my own way. And you heard one of the founders of Black Lives Matter speak. And after she was done speaking, I said, I can go now. I don't want to go now, but I can turn it over to people like Opal Tometi. There's still indifference that's reigning supreme. There's a recent college graduate, a 23-year-old, who told me, I don't care enough to care about why I don't care. You guys take care of it, elders and crones. You take care of what you created. I've got some other things I'm chasing now, and I'll think about it. But I don't really care that much about making my vote count. The only cure for the ills of democracy is more democracy. And the third and final cornerstone of what makes America truly America at our best is our commitment not to prowess, but to goodness. Not to conquest, but to restoration. I simply want a good government and a good president who will motivate the rest of our citizenry to be good enough individuals. That's how, in the biblical message in Genesis, in Hebrew, the words are good enough. Creation is good enough, not perfect, not lousy, good enough. I want to be a good enough parent. I want to be a good enough partner. I want to be a good enough citizen. I want to be a good enough minister. I want to be a good enough person. I'm not interested in greatness. Don't get derailed by greatness. We're in service of goodness in our land at our best. For example, I'll just give one example. To counteract terror, and this idea isn't original with me, perhaps the United States could take the lead in getting all the industrialized societies to participate in a modern-day global Marshall Plan that would dedicate hundreds of billions of dollars, not for the next 5 years and out, not for an election period, 30 years, a generation and a half, maybe make that 40 years, two generations, to the cause of eliminating hunger, homelessness, inadequate education, insufficient health care, the root causes of terror in our own land and in other lands. Let the United States be bold enough to set up an international body of recognize an utterly diverse spiritual leaders and academics and nurses and people on welfare and community organizers, and have us all get together on this institute, this organized international body, to promote creative and compassionate programs within and beyond this land. And with all the talk about the possible reinstallment and statement of the military draft, I'm all for it. And I think that every United States citizen should be spending 5 to 6 years. Pay off the debt. If you're in college or whatever you're doing, pay off your debts and then have you as a sister and brother enlist to serve your country. Different ways to serve. But I'm asking us today to expand our ways of serving our land to assist in the implementation of said global Marshall Plan. You don't have to choose that way, but you can choose that way. I know I could have benefited from that instead of getting a deferment because I'm a minister. I know my kids and my grandchildren could surely benefit from this. Our granddaughter, we were just at her graduation at UC Santa Cruz, and she's taking a couple years to teach English as a second language in either in Asia or in Spain. And I say, go for it. Stay as long as you need to be there. And I got a wallet to help you in whatever way you need, because I want you to be a servant. To Shirley Chisholm, who ran for first African-American woman to be elected to Congress in the 60s. She said, service is the rent we pay for the privilege of being here on earth. I want our kids to pay some rent. Do something for our country. As I'm trying to do in my own clumsy way. And time's running out on me. Someday soon, it appears to this patriot that if we're true to our American way of life, to the path of freedom and diversity and compassion, we must say no more innocent deaths at home or abroad. Someday soon, America's conscience will be goaded to wage peace at home and abroad. Our spouse character will push us to lay down roads, to dig wells of clean water where people can safely drink, to build hospitals and schools to teach hygiene and sexual ethics and mathematics, and inoculate against disease and battle malnutrition, treat people of different colors and orientations and classes fairly, at home and abroad. Someday soon, we will join with others who are committed to transforming every injustice in front of us into some version of justice. Someday soon. If that sounds too upbeat, I'm sorry. I'm a Unitarian Universalist. I believe that every unit of existence is sacred and to be treated as such. I believe in universal hope and salvation. Either everybody gets in or nobody gets in. All I want is for us to be a good country. I want to share some closing words from E.M. Forster. Two cheers for democracy. One, because it admits variety, and two, because it permits criticism. But two cheers are quite enough. There's no occasion to give three. Two will do.